I'm sorry. Introduce our first speaker. Our first speaker is from the nation's capital. Her name is Gail.
Good evening, family. I'm Gail, and I'm at it.
Gail.
Boy, sure is good to be in the meeting. And the Spirit of God is working right now, because I asked God to present himself in this room right now and show up and show out. And he's going to talk through me to get to you all about my experience, my strength, and my hope. Whew. On the 29th of September, in 94, I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and the topic that I'll be sharing about is feeling lonely in recovery. I didn't want to be here when I got here. Oh, boy, it wasn't a decision of mine. Oh, boy. I'm a mother of five. May I sit down? I'm a mother of five, and my last child was a time where I had to make a decision whether I wanted to stay here or stay out there. That last child allowed me to have my water break and didn't leave out the crack house. I wasn't in no pain. The crack was around the table, the alcohol, the cigarettes, and the ashes. And that's all I needed. So I wasn't in no pain, and I asked him just to pass me the towel, and it's going to be all right. I didn't go to the hospital until the next day. And when the next day I went into the hospital, I had a bag of dope in my pocket. And kept that dope in my pocket for the 3 days that I was in the hospital and delivered that child. From that day, they said, "You can go home now, Gail." I said, "Where I'm going?" Because everywhere I went, they were using. Everybody I knew was using. Where do I go? So when they said I can go home, I told them I can't. What I would do was ask you all at this moment to find me a place to get me some help. I never think that I knew how to pronounce that word, H-E-L-P. And when they decided that I was serious about what I was asking for, they sent me over detox for 7 days, and I stayed for 7 days. From that point, I went to Currid Hall for a 28-day program. Mind you, I took me with me. The 26th day, I got put out because I took my behavior with me, and it allowed me to get put out of the program. And when I got put out the program, I started right back where I ended up at, back around that same corner, falling on my knees and wasn't praying to God, and I was doing everything I had to do to obtain the drug. I don't know why I'm so nervous. I don't know, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself at that particular time. When I had to go back out there from July to September, I got the beating of my life. You know, I was living in the park with my last two kids. The last one was in the hospital, but the two before that, I was living in the park and eating out the trash can. The WIC program that I had, that I was on, I sold all the food stamps. I sold the food stamps. I sold myself. And if I could have sold my kids that day, that'd have been up for sale. At that moment when the Spirit of God reached my soul and told me that this is not the way that he has me to live. That he's getting ready to show up. When he showed up in my life, I was able to get myself back together after getting put out of a carried hole, staying out for the 2 months, going to transitional home, urine dirty. When the nurse called me to the office and passed me the cup, I told her there wasn't no need for that. My urine was dirty. That was one more time God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. That counselor told me that I didn't have to tell it to nobody as long as God knows, she knows, and I know. She allowed me to stay in that program. That was in 94 in September. And when I stayed in that program, I was willing to do whatever the dying could do. You know, I was willing to follow any kind of suggestions there was. Mind you, the program that I went in, it was for mother and children. I took the other two kids. My children's ages are 26, 19, 10 and 11 and 12. And when I took the 10 and the 11 and the 12 and I transitioned with me, it allowed my life to start. We stayed in that transitional home for, it was a 6 month program. I stayed for 8 months. I left there and I went to transitional, stayed for 2 years. And after the 2 year program, my process started. I was working in a Samaritan ministry doing volunteer work. And after the volunteer work, I don't know, I felt like I was doing what God allowed me to do. That was to go to meetings, sit down and shut up, and let somebody guide me. But the topic of feeling lonely in recovery, I really, really didn't want to be here. You know, I've been in rooms, and a room can be so crowded and so full of people. And I just couldn't reach out. I didn't want nobody to really know who I really was. I wore many masks. I kept myself up. I kept my hair up. I kept my nails done. And I was hurting so bad on the inside. And I was scared to tell people who I really was. I was that person that I'm Jekyll and Mrs. Hyde. When I come out in the streets, I'm a real nice lady, a productive member in society. But when I'm behind closed doors with my kids, you know, it's a different story. You know, I remember in my fifth year, when my kids got taken away from me because of my behavior. And it was with that last child that I had that I didn't want. I did everything that I could do to get rid of him in my way, and that was smoking all the crack I could smoke, drinking all the alcohol I could drink, and swallowing all kinds of pills, you know. But that child, I must say, the day that I realized that child allowed me to start my life over again, that child is a child that I hated, and it took me a long time to be able to share that in a meeting. I remember in my fifth year when I abused that child and he went to school. I went to go see my therapist, and my therapist had called the people, had them to call the authority. I got a call from the police officer, Officer Johnson, and told me he had Jasmine, Danielle, and Jacquise and Devon. I was riding down Martin Luther King Avenue, driving. And when I got that phone call, my life had stopped. I put my foot in the accelerator and I tried to kill myself. I didn't think it was anything else left for me to do. So when they took my kids and put me on probation and my mother wouldn't let me see my child or my children until I got myself together, I decided to come into a meeting and tell y'all who I really was. I was that person that didn't want to get hurt anymore, didn't want anybody to hurt me no more, stick that knife in my back, no more. you know. But before I was able to do that, I had to expose who I really was. And once I did that, I was ready to be introduced to me. Then the time came, my oldest son. Which was 26 years old. I got a call from one of the other officers that my son got killed the day after my 9th year anniversary. You know, I'm bouncing back and forth my 9th year anniversary, and if it wasn't for the Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, if it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be here. Now, lonely road is being here, not using, and being around so many people telling me that it was going to be all right, you know, and I didn't know that that anyone could ever express to me how it's going to be all right until I heard early on in my recovery, my best girlfriend went through the same situation, and I realized that I could do it if I can just stick and stay. And going on that path, it allowed me to be on the road of feeling lonely and recovering. What's come over me, but I just know that God and you people has allowed me to be here one more time. You know, I was so spastic all day about sharing, and now I get up here and I seem like I can't open my mouth, you know. God and you people saved me for me. I don't know what to do. The isolation of me being in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous really isn't an easy ride. You know, when you're trying to go somewhere with God, a lot of times the road gets real, real lonely. You know, a lot of people that you have in your life, when you first come here, they seem to drop off as you're going down one lane. You know, the stop signs show up. The yield sign shows up. The emergency roadside service show up. And I guess I'm showing up to say, with all that I've been through being here, I hadn't found it necessary to use. And I'm not talking about just using drugs. I'm talking about using another human being to get what I want or get what I need to have. Using is just not on the agenda today. Using is just not happening. You know, I'm going to close because I don't want to take up nobody else's time. I'm out of here. You all have a good evening.
Now introduce our second speaker. Our second speaker is Marie.
It's a tough act to follow. My name is Marie. I'm an addict. I would love to tell you that I've never been lonely in recovery and that life has been fantastic, but that would be a lie. And the one thing I've learned, one of the things that I've learned since I've been here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous is that it's my duty, it's my obligation, and it's a privilege to get up here in front of you people and tell the truth. That's all I can do. I can give you my strength, my experience, and my take on the situation. And I've learned in the time that I've been here that if I'm lonely, it's because I chose to be lonely. It's because I choose to be lonely. I have a higher power that works in my life today. Most of the time, I actually let it work today. I'm back on my third step for the second time around, and I've really had to evaluate how much I'm turning over and how much I'm holding on to and how much I got to let go of. And what I found is the things that I hold on to keep me isolated, keep me separated, and keep me lonely. I have an incredible group of friends. I've learned how to be a friend here. I've learned how to suit up and show up when I don't want to. You know, I know how to, when I want to go to a party, but I get a 12-step call. How to balance those things in my life and make the right choices that I'm, and right by right, I don't mean what you think is right. I mean like what I think is right and like what I can wake up with in the morning. And that's allowed me making those right decisions, making the next step, and being there for people has allowed some really amazing people to be here for me. In the last year, I have three teenagers who were very young when I got clean, and fortunately had never really had to see me use. What they, you know, the oldest one was four when I got clean, and she doesn't really remember anything. None of them do. And she's 17, and she's here with me this weekend with her little normie friend, and we talk about addiction, and we talk about the steps, and we talk about the things that I've learned here, because I think those are all applicable to her life, and it's what I have to offer. It's what I have to offer. And so it's kind of cool that she's here. She's with her friend. We went to the dance last night. And then I also have my 15-year-old son who's got 13 days clean. He had 10 months clean. And about a week before Easter, he decided to try to take his own life. And he took his third trip in less than a year to the psych hospital. It's been a tough year. I got court dates involved. He's got, you know, a therapist and a psychiatrist and an intensive outpatient program and a school system, and they're all up my butt. And you know what? I've allowed them to be in the situation. I grew up with the lie that no matter what, you don't tell. I grew up with the lie that if you're strong, you don't need help. And it took me a while in recovery to recognize that lie and to let it die. I don't have to be alone today. The first time I took my daughter, who's 17 and she's got her stuff together, I had to take her less than a year ago. So as a matter of fact, well, it's been a little over, last January. I had to take her to the hospital because she wanted to die. And she knew enough because of growing up in these rooms that didn't have to be that way. That she didn't have to be lonely and she didn't have to want to hurt herself, that she had choices. And so she came to me. And to be really honest, I'd like to tell you I knew right what to do and I had no freaking clue. Because here's my really together 16-year-old, the one that's like my go-to girl. And she's hysterically crying outside of a meeting where she's been with me. And somebody said something that triggered her, and then she went out and shared with another addict in the room. And he said, what are you going to do? Are you going to take her to the hospital? I'm like, okay. I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. It was God working through another addict that I allowed to be in my life because I was lucky enough to be at a meeting when all this went down. This past year has been a hard year as a parent, as a single parent. And there's Papa Ian in the picture. He's somewhere in Arizona having more babies. And that's his choice. He misses out. Now, I would like to tell you that I never feel lonely and angry and resentful because he gets to walk right on away from the problems. But that would be a lie. I already told you I'm going to tell you the truth. There are a lot of times when I'm angry and I'm resentful. And when I was sitting in the hospital thinking that my son could die, and I was waiting for them to come back and tell me if he was going to be okay, it crossed my mind that if he died, his daddy wouldn't even know. And this isn't just like what my friend calls a sperm donor. This is the man who was my husband and their father until we got divorced when he was 9. So he knew his dad. And his dad walked out. He actually lived with his dad in the middle of the legal problems. He did a little geographical. And I was glad to see him go, I hate to say it, because I was 9 months apiece when I had had a whole bunch of years of drama. And he came home and the drama started because we're addicts. We take us wherever we go. And I tell you all that because there have been times when I feel very lonely, when I feel the burden of having 3 teenage children who have their own independent issues. And then you throw some mental health issues on top of it, and you throw some addiction on top of it, and you throw, you know, a rebellious teenage attitude on top of it. It's a lot. And then you throw 1, 2, sometimes 3 jobs on top of that and work a program and sponsor women and try to be a sponsee. It's a lot. But because God has allowed me the gift of recovery, I've been able to do it. Those lonely moments happen when I get caught up in my own will, when I'm running from my feelings and I'm trying to fix, and like she was saying about, you know, using other people, I've done that. I can't tell you, I haven't. I'll tell you right now, that's what most of my step work the second time around has been about, relationships. Because it's real easy to fix that lonely feeling for, oh, half an hour or so. But what I find is on the other side of that half hour, I feel worse than I did to begin with. I'm sick of feeling like that. I got to be able to look at myself in the mirror and know that the choices that I'm making today are okay. And I got to, what I've really had to practice is that faith that God will take care of it. You know, and I've watched conventions historically for me have been a great time of fun and acting out. There's a lot of eye candy. A lot of eye candy. I'm like, whoo. Go to the dance, see what I'm talking about. And I used to chase that eye candy. And I used to feel a sense of intense loneliness if I couldn't have me some of that eye candy. I don't need that today. Now, doesn't say I don't want it, but I don't need it. And I don't need it on the terms that they're going to make me feel worse afterwards. I have choices. I choose to have. I'm choosing. I'm learning to choose. Let's be honest. I'm learning to choose how to have fuller relationships, real relationships. And my girlfriends have helped me do that. And Narcotics Anonymous has helped me to meet some men who are actually not out for a piece, but want to help me out. I didn't believe they existed before I got here because I had never met one. Even my dad's friends that wanted to help me wanted to help themselves. I never knew a decent man until I got here. Now, there are newcomers in the room. They're not all decent. We bring ourselves with us. We don't always have our best interests at heart, but what I've found is if I follow my instinct and I follow God's direction, then I usually know who I can trust. I've learned that here, because before I got here, I would trust anybody, and I was pretty sure you were going to screw me over, but it was okay. Somehow it'd be okay. I was gullible. These women and these few men that I've allowed in my life to be friends have carried me through a lot in my recovery. I've been through a divorce. that man I was married to. We did 6 years using. We did 6 years together clean. And at some point, even though he never picked up, he decided N.A. wasn't the place for him. And he didn't like hanging out with those people in N.A. And I said, well, you know, I'm one of those people in N.A. So we got a problem. We lost the ability to communicate. He lost the desire to communicate. And you can't have a relationship one way. And I was really lonely. And there is nothing to me worse than being lonely in a room full of people except being lonely in your bed with your husband. That was lonely. So I took that faith. I took that leap of courage. And I changed the situation. And I'd like to tell you that I did all the things that I aspired to do when I got divorced. Because I was all about, I wanted to find me a spiritual man. I wanted to find me somebody I could share my dreams and my hopes and my, you know, aspirations with and share the program with. I found a lot of men. And none of it was spiritual. And then I carried some guilt and some shame about that stuff. And I had to work really hard on it. And I'm getting ready to work a four-step on it. Ooh, I'm not looking forward to that. But I am looking forward to being free. Because I know that's what's on the other side of that. And I'm looking forward to not feeling so lonely in my own skin, at my own creation. These women have helped me to understand, well, like I said, in the few men that are brave enough to show up, for myself and for my children. They really helped me understand that no matter what, I don't have to be alone. And I'll tell you, standing outside, I was at a ballpark with my friend who's in recovery, and my phone hadn't been working the whole time we're in the ballpark, and I was like really annoyed because I'm like addicted to my phone. And I couldn't get it to work, and we got out of the ballpark, and so I'm messing with the phone, and I finally get it to work. And all of a sudden, I realize there's like, I don't know, five messages. I'm like, ooh, this ain't good. And I start calling, and I find out that my son's been arrested in Ocean City, the one that's here with me tonight. Well, he's at home right now, but or at the hotel. But he was arrested. And my initial instinct was I needed to get in a car by myself and drive up here. And my friend said, no, you're not going by yourself. I'm like, it's silly for you to have to go up through with this with me. And she wouldn't take no for an answer. And I'm really grateful, because it was a shitty night. It was hardcore nasty. They were mean to him. They were mean to me. And that was his second trip to the psych ward. And I've had a few more instances where people have tried to offer me help, and on my instinct, going way back to what I was taught as a child, is you don't need nobody's help. Don't show weakness no matter what. Don't show you need anybody no matter what. And I've been learning. I've been practicing. I've been humbled, because I wouldn't humble myself. So I've decided I'm going to try to be a little less stubborn so that maybe life doesn't have to humble me. Maybe I can just do it more gracefully. That's the hope. You know, like I said, I would love to say I never feel lonely or angry or resentful about their dad not being in the picture and not having to burden some of the weight. Financially, he doesn't. Spiritually, he doesn't. Physically, he doesn't. He's just done, checked on out. And the thing is, I look at them and I think, you know what? I wouldn't miss this for the world. It sucks some days. It really does. My 14-year-old's so obnoxious right now. I can't stand him. I keep going, is he done with this stage yet? But they make me laugh because I can show up. They make me cry because I've learned how to feel here. They make me proud. They hurt my heart. They do all those things. Now, not just my children, my friends. I've seen friends come and go. My best friend for 5 years, my first 5 years of recovery, decided that she didn't need that nursing degree that she had been working on, and she didn't need those children she had been raising, and she didn't need that key tag anymore, and she didn't need the activities committee and all the other committees that she was involved in. She didn't need those things. She needed heroin. And this very bright, intelligent woman went out. And what I learned was, I learned a couple really important things from that lady, and one of them has to do with being lonely. And that is that I never called her on anything. I co-signed all her bullshit. I signed up for all of it, and I didn't save her. And I did all of it because I was afraid of being lonely. Because I was afraid. I had one friend. God knows I was lucky to have that, and nobody else could really love me like that. Nobody, if they knew me, if they knew who I was, the things that I thought, the sick crap that I've done in my past and that I've thought about, they couldn't love me. They couldn't care about me, and they couldn't be there for me. And that self-centered bullshit thinking helped to get her high. And I tell you what, I still got to live with that. I had to try to make an amends to her for that because I didn't help her. And I learned that from now, you know, from that point forward, I won't co-sign a friend's bullshit. I won't do it. And at one point, I had to make a really tough decision with a friend who meant the world to me. And I was pretty sure that by calling her on this situation, I was going to lose her as a friend. And I told her, I understand if you never talk to me again, but I got to live with myself. And if something happened to you and I didn't stand and say what I thought needed to be said and do what thought needed to be done and something happened to you, I'd have to live with that. I can't do it anymore. I choose not to do it anymore. And you know, either take me or leave me, love me or don't. And I've had to practice that with my girlfriends and with my male friends that are really friends. And I hope to one day aspire to be able to do that in a romantic relationship. I haven't got there yet. I haven't got there yet. And that's okay. It's a process. It's a process. I am extremely grateful to be clean today. Extremely grateful to have a choice every morning and every night about how I want to live and what I want to do with my life. And one of those choices is, do I want to be lonely? Do I want to walk this road alone? And I'll tell you, I make some people sick because I love Narcotics Anonymous. Because I've heard and love people. And I've watched my ex-husband, who's still clean, as far as I know. The last time I talked to him about 9 months ago or whatever, he was still clean. But he's a lonely son of a bitch. I can do it on my own. Well, my parents did it. I know lots of people who did it on their own. But they're lonely and they're miserable and they're living the same crap they've always lived in. I don't have to do that today. Woohoo me. I don't want to. I don't want to walk this slow road alone. I don't want to have to try to deal with the things that I deal with on a daily basis and not know that there's somebody in this room who's been through it or worse and can help me. Every time I've gone through something difficult, somebody's been along to help me, to give me some words of guidance. You know, my kids started when they first turned into teenagers and they were being all crazy, and this woman came up to me. She goes, you know, I learned one thing, honey. I said, what was that? She goes, hair grows, holes close. She said, pick your battles. And you know what? It stuck with me. But she had some valuable experience, and her children were grown, and they were well-adjusted, and they were happy, and they went through funky stages she shared with me. And I was like, oh, there's hope. And that's what I need here. I don't need anybody to co-sign my crap. I don't need anybody to tell me I'm doing right if I'm doing wrong. And I don't need to stand up here and sound real good and then go out there and live real bad. What I need is that shoulder. And I need to be able to give that shoulder to somebody else. And unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, you know, the experiences that I've had that have been difficult almost always have come up in my life to be able to help somebody else. So they weren't for a waste. They weren't wasted. Thank you very much for letting me share. Thank you for being here, and have a good night.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. You made me cry.
Before we open the meeting to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the podium one at a time. Also, keep in mind that there may be others who want to share. Whoever wants to share can come up to the podium.
Hi, my name is Ronnie. I'm an addict who's powerless over the disease of addiction. And I've got a lot out of what I heard tonight, and I felt the need to come here and check this workshop out because I've become, in the 15 years, clean, lonely, and recovery. And but I know when not to be alone. I know when to come to a meeting, when to share, when to pull up on somebody one-on-one or call somebody every now and then. But my whole life has just transitioned. I'm from the Midwest originally, and when I became an addict, when I crossed that imaginary line and from playing and having fun into addiction, and being in a different geographical location, the friends changed, the playmates changed, and I felt out of place. I've been living in the D.C. area now for over 20 years, and it's not where I was raised. It's not where I became an addict. The people in the region of the D.C. area, Montgomery County, Maryland, everybody knows each other, you know? So it's like, if you can identify what I'm talking about, it's like that connection you have with little Bobo you went to school with, or Michelle, who you hung out with in fourth period, and all of this. And I come to learn in recovery, even though I take daring moments to be outspoken and I'm a direct person, that I'm very shy. You know, and I thought at first, knowing that about myself, when the voice came to me and said, "You're shy," and I was like, "Get out of here. No one will ever believe I'm shy." But you know how a spirit can speak to you sometimes and give you a little clue about your characteristics? That's exactly what happened. And then on top of that, the shyness coupled with the regional geographical change of me living in D.C., going to school, finishing school, becoming an addict, an active addiction, and not knowing anyone here, and on top of me being private, pretty much kept me where I am and manifested into who I am. It's like, okay, I'm private. I like to do this. Really, I was like a closet user, a closet. I have lovers in the closet. It's like, you can't come out until I'm ready, you know. So these kind of things that my own characteristic on top of what was really happening created more loneliness. In addition to that, in recovery, I got awakened to a chronic pain disorder that I live with as a result of a car accident. And in that description of the this other disease, it says that there is no known cure. And I was like, damn, that sounds like Narcotics Anonymous, right? There's no known cure. And then another thing I read said, this is a disease that isolates you from others. It was just like the disease of addiction, because I'm an isolator, too. I could, you know, before caller ID, I wouldn't answer the phone. You know, it was a new invention, you know, since being in recovery. So all those things have kept me on the outskirt. Like I said, I know what to do, when not to be lonely, but there's just this hole in me that no matter how many times I reach out to the females, it's just the connection's just not made all the time. So then I said, well, I'll just bond with people who come naturally. Well, that happened, and then they come and go, and then they come and go, and then it's like, and I get kind of jealous of seeing the pack of people running around. It's like 3 and 4 deep, right? Or, and I'm just the person. I keep viewing myself as the person who's the charmer who comes into the room, hi, and everybody's like, hi Ronnie, and then I get all these hugs and all these kisses, and then when I leave, I'm like, damn, I don't have one friend out of that meeting, you know, and I reach out. I don't call you if I ever meet you. Don't say I didn't call, because that's my pattern, you know. But I haven't figured it out. I just thought I'd share it to expose it, because sometimes it bothers me. It eats at the core, and it makes me very, very sad that it happens that way. So, and I met people all over, but the type of person I am, if I don't see the reciprocation, fuck your ass. I'm not going to call you back. That's just how it is. You know, I'll at least put myself out there and do it, right? But, you know, I come from a wounded past, so I don't want to take abuse too long. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, I just wanted to, again, expose my illness, and I'll keep coming back. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing. Thank you for those who shared. Let's close the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by a serenity prayer. God.
Yeah, sure.